Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Christians and why I'm not one of them, right after this. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, and a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Now, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed this scriptural law when they put into our federal constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away. And in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of these just weights and balances that we received from our founding fathers in our Constitution, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we are the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses, God, and our founding fathers, or was it Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that I teach in my Mosaic Law School. We conduct that twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. The Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Remember, the Mosaic Law School is available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Well, I got a letter from a young lady. I presume she's a young lady by the name of... See if I got her name here. Eleanor, I believe it was. Lost my note here, but I believe it was Eleanor, and she wrote a letter, and she said, "Why is it that you say you're not a Christian when you read, quote, and cite the Bible so often on your programs?" She's not the only person that's ever written and asked me that question from time to time. I guess I let it slip out that I'm not one of those commonly called Christians. Now, I'm not opposed to Christians. I don't want you Christians to be, you know, to get bummed out and say, "Well, that guy's not a Christian, so I'm not going to listen to him." Hey, listen, if I came in here and said I was a Confucianist, now listen to what I've got to say, why you just trip all over yourself trying to get us placed so that you could listen to this Confucianist. If I said I'm a Buddhist, and then I've got this to say, you know, you'd be real curious about that. Say, "Well, I want to listen to this guy." But if you walk in the room and you say, "Well, I'm not a Christian," Christians get real offended by that. Very offended. And they go, "I'm not going to listen to this guy. Why, he's not a Christian." I want to suggest that you reevaluate, because you see, in the world today of about 6 billion people plus, only about a billion of them are Christians. That's only 1 out of 6. So if we've got a billion Catholics and a couple hundred million Protestants out there, that's about 1 in 5. That's about 20%. Let's figure there's 20%, 1 in 5 Christians in the world. Well, my goodness, 80% of the world's population aren't Christians, then, are they? Now, if we follow the democratic principle, and that is the majority is always right, then the majority who are not Christians must be right about theological topics and theological or God-oriented information, topics, beliefs, etc., because the Christians only represent 1 out of 5. 4 out of 5 are represented by some other group. Now, you know as well as I do that if you're a Republican, that doesn't necessarily mean that because you live in a county or a state or a region where you're outnumbered by Democrats, that Democrats are necessarily right and all Republicans are wrong, and I'm going to change my voting registration from Republican to Democrat because the majority of the people in my county are Democrats. Now, see, I'm here in Ozark County, Missouri. Now, we've got 255 registered Democrats and 2,500 registered Republicans. So, obviously, the 255 Democrats must be wrong. Well, can 2,500 Republicans be wrong? Can the majority be wrong? Can 80 million Germans supporting Hitler be wrong? So let's come on and get real and start looking at reality. You know, just because you're in a minority doesn't make you right or wrong. So it's got to be some other criteria that makes this determination. So the Muslims, they represent about 1.3 billion, or about 1 person out of every 5. So I mentioned in the last program we're talking about heaven and do good people go to heaven and so on. And my conclusion is nope, not according to the Scripture. Now, the Scripture may be wrong. You know, the Bible, this book that the Christians hold up. You know, Bill Clinton used to walk out of church every once in a while. He'd be carrying a Bible. I presume it was a Hebrew Bible, a Christian Bible, or, you know, some kind of a holy book there of the Christian faith. And I'm not sure that Bill Clinton was a bad Christian. In fact, it looks like to me that Bill Clinton was doing all the things that Christians normally do. And so the reason that I say that I'm not a Christian is because I don't do those things that Christians do. And I do a lot of things that Christians don't do that they would really be offended at. So my conclusion is that if I was a Republican and you came up and you said to me, well, Gordon, what's your politics? And I say, I'm a Republican. And you say, well, who'd you vote for in the last election? I voted for John Kerry. Well, wait a minute, Gordon. Did you give any money to the political campaign? I did. How much did you give? I gave $1,000. Did you give it to the Republican Central Committee? No, I gave it to the Democratic National Committee. Wouldn't you say to me, well, wait a minute, Gordon, aren't you mixed up? If you're a Republican, shouldn't you be giving your money to the Republicans and voting for George Bush or voting for Republican candidates? Well, yeah, it would seem like to me, you know, that communists support communists and Nazis support Nazis, and Christians support Christians, and Muslims support Muslims, and so on down the line. That makes all the sense in the world. You'd say, well, you know, Gordon, I think you're a hypocrite. And I'd have to conclude that you're probably right. Yeah. You know, if I said I'm a Republican and I give my money to the Democrats and I'm a Republican but I vote for Democratic candidates, I'd say, well, that's kind of hypocritical. So I need to change. I need to call myself an independent. You know, sometimes I vote Republican, sometimes I vote Democratic, sometimes I don't vote at all. Sometimes I'm too drunk to find the polling place, you know. I mean, at least that would be honest, wouldn't it? Well, now, the Christians, they run around, they say, well, I'm a Christian. They wear it almost like a soldier, you know, wears his accomplishments on his chest. And he's got all these ribbons and badges, and they're real vocal about it. And they talk about their churches and about their Christian beliefs and philosophies. And sometimes they even get real excited and carry placards and banners and march on Washington and march on abortion clinics and do all these things. But from my observation, what I've observed is that Christians come in two forms, good and bad. If this guy agrees with you, he's a good Christian. If he disagrees with you, he's a bad Christian. If this Christian over here is in favor of a woman's right to choose, that's a bad Christian. If this Christian is opposed to abortion in any form, way, shape, or manner, that's a good Christian. If this Christian over here says, well, I believe in evolution and Christianity and the gap theory, and I believe that Genesis 1, 2, and 3 is incorrect scientifically, that's a normal, everyday, garden variety, run-of-the-mill, good Christian. You come along and say, no, I think that God created the world in 6 days, 6 literal days, 24 hours each, did the whole thing, including the universe. People look at you like, well, you got to be some kind of nut. Well, you're some kind of a bad Christian. You're some kind of a jerk. You don't understand science. That's been kind of my observation. So I don't want to get in the way of all you good Christians out there. I don't want to come along here and say, well, I'm one of you guys, and I'm one of you Christians over here, because I don't do the things that you do, and I don't believe in the things that you believe in. Now, I'm not sure that makes me a bad Christian, because I'm not even a good Christian. I'm not a Christian at all. Now, Eleanor here makes this observation. She says, well, you read the Bible. That's right, and that's why I'm not a Christian. I read the Bible. Why, if you read the Bible, you'd get real confused. Christians will tell you that. Why, you don't want to read the Bible. My daughter happens to belong to one of the youth groups over here at the local Methodist church. It's not because we're Methodists, and it's not because that we're religious. It's because it's a social gathering. And every once in a while, they'll ask the children, the students, you know, the young people there, well, have you ever read the 5 books of Moses? And my daughter will raise her hand, and maybe one or two others, and nobody else has ever read the first 5 books of the Bible. Now, you'd think that the children that are 14, 16, 18 years old, you know, would have read the first 5 books of the Bible at some point in their young lives. I mean, by the time you get to be 17 or 18. My daughter was asked this question, can you name the books of the Bible? She was the only person there that could name all 66 books of the Bible. Would seem like to me that if you were a Christian, you'd read the Bible. And if you read the Bible once or twice, you'd probably come into contact with some obscure books like Philippians, Colossians, Revelation, Nahum, Micah. You know, just in average reading, but, you know, the average student over there in the youth group evidently hadn't done that. They didn't know. So my daughter got this name. You know, she's goody two-shoes over there because she knows all the books of the Bible, and because she's read the first 5 books of the Bible. Crazy part of it, she's read the whole thing. She's only 17, and she's read the whole Bible. 1,189 chapters. If you read 4 chapters a day, you could do it in about 1 year. I know it's a wild new concept. Why don't you try it? Kind of an interesting book. It's got a lot of neat stories in there about gore and blood and guts and killing and all kinds of neat stuff like that. Well, shucks, you watch The Terminator and you watch The Godfather. Can there be anything bloodier in the Bible than The Godfather or The Terminator? And besides that, it claims to be true history. So I thought I'd go through and I'd tell you why I'm not a Christian, because Eleanor asked, and I get asked that question quite often, and I've got 37 reasons why I am not a Christian. So you ought not to call me one of those, but then you ought not to be too mad at me, because I'm in the majority. 80% of the people that live on this planet are not Christians. 80% of us aren't Christians. Now, I'm not throwing rocks at Christians or Protestants or Jews or Mohammedans or anybody else. Everybody's got a right to choose. And I made my choice, and Christianity was not one of those choices. So let's take a look at swine's flesh. Christians, as a general rule, eat pig. Now, Muslims, as a general rule, do not eat pig. Jews don't eat pig, and there are a few Christians that don't eat pig. It's called swine's flesh. Well, there's two chapters in the Bible. If you're keeping score here, why don't you flip over to Leviticus chapter 11 or Deuteronomy chapter 14. And let's take a listen here to Leviticus 11, verses 4 through 8, where it says, "Nevertheless, these shall you not eat, of them that chew the cud, or of them that divide the hoof, as the camel, because he chews the cud, but divides not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the coney, because he chews the cud, but divides not the hoof, he's unclean unto you. And the hare, because he chews the cud, but divides not the hoof, he is unclean unto you. And the swine, though he divide the hoof and be cloven-footed, yet he cheweth not the cud, he is unclean to you. Of their flesh you shall not eat, and of their carcasses you shall not touch. They are unclean to you." All right, so let's just stop right there for a minute. Camels, conies, those are rock rabbits, and hares, those are jackrabbits. So of the rabbit families, now many Christians eat rabbit. They sell rabbit in the meat market. They sell Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage over here in the supermarket. And Christians, as a general rule, there's a few exceptions, but not very many. Most Christians that I've heard of, seen, come in contact with, eat pig. They're pig-eating Christians. And they've got 55 reasons why they should be eating pig. But I looked in the Bible, and Leviticus 11 says, don't do that. And then there's another chapter over here. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 14. I'll just flip over here quickly just to show you that God had even mentioned it twice. I mean, I guess he got kind of serious about this thing of eating pig. So in Deuteronomy chapter 14, see if I can find it here, he says, as it relates to pigs, let's see if I can find pig in here. Well, he's in verse 3, he says, "You shall not eat any abominable thing." He says, "These are the beasts which you shall eat, the ox," those are cows, "the sheep and the goat," you can eat sheep, goats, and cows, "and the hart and the roebuck and the fallow deer and the wild goat and the pygarg and the wild ox and the..." These are bison, you know, like buffaloes, deer, and so on. Wild ox is bison. And every beast that parts the hoof and cleaveth the cleft in two claws and chews the cud among the beasts, that shall you eat. Okay? So he tells you, here's what you shall eat, and that's what I eat. And I eat ox, sheep, goat, deer, buffalo, so on. But I don't eat, and these, he says, "Nevertheless, these you shall not eat, of them that chew the cud, or of them that divide the cloven hoof, as the camel, the hare, the coney. They chew the cud, but they divide not the hoof, therefore they're unclean to you. And the swine, because it divides the hoof, yet chews not the cud, it's unclean to you. You shall not eat of their flesh, nor touch their dead carcass." Now, obviously, God made a mistake. And all you Christians that eat pig know more than God did. Or know more now than God does, because that's why you eat pig. And there's 55 reasons why you should, but I wanted to point out that in the Bible, God said, don't eat it. Okay? So I don't eat it. Not that I'm right and you're wrong, or that you're right and I'm wrong. I'm just telling you that I'm not a Christian because Christians eat pig and I don't. So there's no point in me calling myself a Christian when I don't follow your customs and practices. That's all. All right. And the Muslims do the same thing. See, the Muslims don't eat pig, and they call themselves Muslims. And the Christians eat pig, and they call themselves Christians. And the Muslims do not call themselves Christians, but you don't throw rocks at them, do you? Okay, well, then don't throw rocks at me, would you? shellfish. Let's take a look at this one. In Leviticus 11, verses 9 and 10, and again over here in Deuteronomy 14, which is a mirror image of Leviticus 11, so I'm going to flip back to Leviticus 11, and I'll just stick with that one, as it deals with clean and unclean fish. Now, most Christians eat real neat stuff, you know, clams, oysters, lobsters, crabs, shrimp. These are big sellers. These are big seafood items. Shrimp boats is a coming. Down in Louisiana, I went into a restaurant one time with my wife. We stopped in some little town in Louisiana. I don't know what the name of the town was, but we stopped, and it was, you know, a pretty good-looking restaurant there. You know, a bunch of cars out in front of it, and we figured, well, all those guys can't be wrong. Whenever you go to a restaurant and there's two cars out front, you know, one cook and one waitress, that doesn't give you a very high report. But, you know, if you drive by and you see 50 cars in the parking lot, and there was a bunch of cars there, and so it must have been a good place to eat. Went in, sat down, picked up the menu, started looking through the menu. It's the only time this has ever happened to me. There was nothing on the menu that we could eat. Everything on there had unclean. I mean, they had soup, but it had turtle in it, or they had alligator in it, or it had pig or shrimp or something in it. Waitress came over. Now, ordinarily, a restaurant, you know, for us kooks, you know, vegetarians and other nuts and dimwits in the society, they'll have a vegetarian plate. And I said, well, there's nothing on here that we can eat. What have you got in the way of a vegetarian plate? And she looked at me with a blank stare like, you got to be kidding, joker. I said, well, could you make up something for us? I mean, could we order this a la carte and you leave this out? And she says, no, this is what we serve here. So my wife and I had to get up and walk out. Now, it's only happened to me once. I'm an old man. It's only happened once, but it happened in Louisiana. So, shellfish, Leviticus 11, verses 9 and 10. Listen to this. And here's God, you know, the creator of the universe, you know. And this is the God of Abraham, the guy that he gave this information to Moses. Remember old Moses from the Ten Commandments fame? Carlton Heston? All right. Here's what he told old Carlton. He said, these shall you eat of all that are in the waters. Whatsoever has fins and scales in the waters, in the seas, and in the rivers, them shall you eat. So he didn't tell you not to eat. He said, hey, listen, if that sucker's got fins and scales, eat him. But he goes on, he says, and all them that have not fins and scales in the seas and in the rivers, and all that move in the waters, and of any living thing which is in the waters, they shall be an abomination unto you. And they shall be even an abomination unto you. You shall not eat of their flesh, but you shall have their carcasses in abomination. Whatsoever hath no fins nor scales in the waters, that shall be an abomination unto you. All right, so, you know, turtles are in the water, and around here people just really, really relish snapping turtle soup. They like to catch these snappers, and snapping turtles have scales, but they don't have fins. And so this God, not your God, but this God, the God of Abraham, the God of Moses, said, don't eat that. So I'm following this God here in the Bible, and I'm not eating it. That's all. So there's no purpose in me calling myself a Christian when I don't eat shellfish. Now, I used to be normal. I used to eat crab and oysters. No, not oysters. It was, what's that other critter? The shell on him is clam. Clam chowder. He ate those clams. And abalone, mussels, barnacles. Ate a couple of shrimp once. Never did eat a lobster, but I imagine they're about like a crab. A crab is a sea spider. I mean, you know, people that eat crabs are eating spiders. In the oceans and in the waters, there's a critter that on land, you know, you'd look at this guy and you'd say, well, this is a spider. Well, in the ocean, it's called a sea spider. Now, you know, most people wouldn't eat a tarantula, but they would eat a crab. You know, and you look up here, you know, you wouldn't eat a centipede, but you'd eat a lobster and so on down the line, you know. Oaths, that's another one over here. In Matthew 5, verses 33 through 37, just to show you that I'm not just partial here, reading from the Old Testament, let's take a look in the New Testament. Chucks, even in the New Testament, there's a law or two, you know, that that Jesus said that we ought to do. You know, crazy things like taking oaths. Listen, Matthew 5:33-37. He said, again, you've heard it has been said by them of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shall perform unto the eternal your oaths. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, because it's God's throne, nor by the earth, because it's his footstool, and neither by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, and neither shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black, but let your communication be yea, yea, or nay, nay, for whatsoever is more than these comes of evil. All right, that's one. And then in James 5, verse 12, another scripture over here in the New Testament, I won't turn to it, but there's two scriptures in the New Testament, Matthew 5:33-37 and James 5:12 tells you, don't swear. Do not take an oath. You ever been to court? You go into court, and then the clerk, you know, will say, well, raise your right hand, and do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Did you get that? Now, in the old days in Idaho, they used to bring a Bible out. They'd put the Bible up there, and you put your left hand on the Bible, raise your right hand, and it says, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And one day I said to the judge, you know, Judge Grant up there, he's administering the oath, and I said, no, sir. And I thought he was going to swallow his chewing tobacco. He was a Mormon. He didn't chew tobacco, but, you know, he just gasped. His eyes bugged out. I thought he was going to have an apoplectic seizure. And he looked at me like, gosh, you must not have understood what I asked you. So he said, again, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? And he looked at me again, and I said, no, sir. Try it next time you're in court. I know it's a wild new concept over there, but it's called the oath issue. And here's Jesus. I mean, you know, sweet Jesus, away in the manger, he said, don't take these oaths. I never seen a Christian in my life that wouldn't take an oath. There's a few people out there that don't take oaths. They affirm. Now, an affirmation is about like an oath. It says, do you affirm that the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, to help you God? And they'll say, I do. And they say, well, that obviates this oath. See, because I didn't take an oath, I took an affirmation. Excuse me, boys and girls, but didn't the scripture say, let God be true, though every man be found a liar? And you're going to come in here and you're going to affirm that what you're going to tell is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And the first question that comes out of the prosecutor or the defense attorney's mouth, he says, what's your name? And you say, well, my name is George Gordon. Now, the scripture says, thy word is truth, and I couldn't find the word George Gordon from Genesis to Revelation. So I discovered one day, you know, they bring you into court, and get you to raise your hand and swear an oath on the only book on planet Earth that tells you not to do that. And then you say, I swear that I'm going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And the first question is, what's your name? And you lie coming right out of the chute. And you say, my name is George Gordon. Because remember, you said you were going to tell nothing but the truth. And the only truth that there is on planet Earth, according to the Scripture, is the Scripture, which says, thy word is truth, and let God be true, though every man be found a liar. I just thought I'd share that with you. So that leaves me out of the running. Christians take oaths, and I don't, so that leaves me out of the Christian running again. Now, Christmas comes into play. Christians practice Christmas. Well, most Christians practice Christmas. Now, there's Eastern Orthodox. I don't know what those guys do. That's the Greek Orthodox Church. I think they practice Christmas, but at a different time of year. And they got the Jews practicing Christmas now. They call that Hanukkah. And then they got the blacks, you know, that aren't Christians. They're Muslims or something. They got them doing something else. I forgot the name of that program. That's around Christmas time, too. And then they got the Christians over here. Well, over in Jeremiah 10, verse 6. Just try this. Jeremiah. This is Jerry, and you'll find Jerry over here right after Isaiah and right ahead of Ezekiel, right about in the middle of your Bible. If you're having a problem finding it, just open the Bible up to the middle, and then just kind of look on each side of the middle. And if you got to Ezekiel, you're too far to the right. And if you're in Isaiah, then you're too far to the left. And Jeremiah is about in the middle. Jeremiah 10, 1 through 6. Listen to this. See if you've ever seen this before. It says, "Hear ye the word which the Eternal speaks unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the customs of the people are vain. For one cuts a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with the axe, and they deck it with silver and gold, they fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it doesn't move. They're as upright as the palm tree, but they don't speak. They must needs to be born, because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, and neither also is it in them to do good. Verse 6, for as much as there is none like unto thee, O Eternal, thou art great, and thy name is great in might." First six verses of Jeremiah chapter 10. What does that sound like to you? A barber pole? May Day? 4th of July? Or does it kind of sound like Christmas? Well, if you answered, that sounds like Christmas, you win the prize. You know, for the customs of the people are vain. These are vain customs. And in verse 2 he says, don't learn these vain customs. Learn not the way of the heathen. For one goes out and cuts a tree out and they deck it with gold and silver. Gee, gosh, I wonder what that is. So, I used to do that. You know, we used to have Christmas trees and jump around and do all those things and hoop and holler. And one day I woke up and I said, you know, and since how God told us in Jeremiah 10 that we ought not to do that, I think I'll quit doing that. And so that's number 4, Christmas, Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6, and I quit doing it. So I'm not practicing Christmas. I'm not taking oaths. I don't eat shellfish and I don't eat pig. Now, if that doesn't offend you Christians out there, I don't know what will. So stand by, and we'll come back with more right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Or again, call direct 417-273-4967. All right, tonight we're looking at why I'm not a Christian. I get this question quite often here, you know, and Eleanor wrote a letter, and it was a pretty testy letter, sometimes called sharp. It was a sharp letter. And she said, why do you claim that you're not a Christian and you read and cite the Bible? I guess she thinks that I must be the Antichrist. If you're not a Christian, you must be the Antichrist if you were to read out of the Bible. What does that make Bill Clinton? I don't know. I'm just asking the question. I mean, this guy goes to church, carries a Bible around, and I mean, this guy's bedded down with anything that wiggles, moves, and squirms, and that includes the ugly two baggers. I mean, there were a couple of those broads over there you'd need two bags on, wouldn't you? All right. Well, anyway, let's look at number five, Passover. Boy, do I get this one. If you do the Passover, you got to be a Jew. Well, that makes all the Muslims mad at you if you do the Passover. Well, in Exodus 12, verse 14, let's flip over here to Exodus 12, second book of the Bible. Genesis, then comes Exodus. In Exodus chapter 12, it's the Passover chapter. I mean, it's one whole great big long chapter, goes into chapter 13, and it talks about the Passover and days of unleavened bread. Not a word of Easter in here anywhere. Now, you take a look at Christians, and Christians practice Easter. You take a look at Jews, and they practice the Passover. Christians do not practice the Passover, save for a few wild-eyed, fanatical, right-wing extremist fanatics. There's 35 or 40 of them around the world. The rest of them are Jews. Now, the Jews don't practice the Passover either. They observe it, but they don't practice it. The difference being that in Exodus chapter 12, it tells you how to do this. It says, you know, you go out and you get a lamb and you bring him up until the 10th day, and then you cut its throat, and then you have to prepare it and put it on the fire and cook it, and you eat it with bitter herbs, and you do it on the 14th day. I've never heard of any Jews doing that. Now, there are a few. There was a Reformed Messianic Jewish group in Tulsa, Oklahoma that did the lamb, but they eviscerated it. They cut the guts out of it, which specifically here in Exodus 12 tells you not to do that, you know, when you're doing the lamb. Now, many Christians that I've talked to will say to me, well, see, we follow Easter and communion, which in the New Testament changed over from this Old Testament practice in Exodus 12, we now do the New Testament Easter. I couldn't find that. Can you find the word Easter anywhere in the Bible, boys and girls? That'll be a real challenge for you. And it is actually in the King James Version in one place. It's in Acts 12, verse 4. Write that down. Easter, Acts 12:4, so that you'll know where to go justify your Easter practices. It's Acts 12, verse 4, where it's a mistranslation from the word Pascha, meaning Passover. See, the King James translators were Christians, translating this Jewish Bible. And they could see Passover all through the Bible. They couldn't find Easter, and since they practiced Easter, they said it's got to be there somewhere, so they just put it in. And they put it in Acts 12, verse 4. Not very scholarly, not very difficult for you to uncover. All you get to do is just go to Strong's Concordance, and he'll tell you that word Easter is a mistranslation, but, you know, that's the way they translated it, so that's the way we got to report it. And I'm a reporter, so I got to report to you that the word Easter is in the Bible. You betcha. A mistranslation in Acts 12, verse 4. Now, in Exodus chapter 12, God tells you three times in here to do the Passover. Let's listen to this one. In Exodus 12, 14, he says, "And this day shall be unto you for a memorial." Remember Memorial Day? We Americans here, for all of you people around the world, we Americans practice a day that's actually called Memorial Day. It's on May 30th, Memorial Day. And it commemorates the end of World War II when we decorate graves. It used to be called Decoration Day. Some people still call it that, Decoration Day. It's a memorial. And we go out and we memorialize and we remember all the people that died in World War I and II and Vietnam and so on, generally war dead. And that's what the Passover is. It says so right here in Exodus 12, verse 14. It says, "This day shall be unto you a memorial, and you shall keep it a feast." A feast to the Eternal throughout your generations. You shall keep it a feast by an ordinance or statute forever. Do you get that? Forever. I don't know how long forever is, boys and girls. I don't know if it's 100 years, 1,000 years, or 1,000,000 years, but I do know this. However long forever is, it ain't up yet. However long forever is, it's still going on, and it hasn't expired. There's a second place in the same chapter. Over in verse 17, it says, "You shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, because in the selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall you observe this day in your generations by an ordinance or statute forever." Now that's twice. Then in verse 24, "And you shall observe this thing for an ordinance to you and to your sons forever." Now that's three times in Exodus chapter 12 that God, that is the God of Moses wrote this. I don't know who your God is, and I don't know who the God of all these Christians is over here, but it isn't this God. This God is something totally different. I mean, this guy's really off the wall. This guy doesn't practice Easter. This guy practices the Passover. This guy isn't advocating or promoting Easter. This guy is advocating and promoting the Passover. Gave you three statutes in here and says, I want you to do this forever. I want you to do the Passover forever. I want you to do the Feast of Unleavened Bread forever. And I want you to teach it to your sons forever. However long forever is. Now, to Christians, forever expired at the cross. When Jesus died, forever was up. That's it. That's the end. And I didn't see it that way. I figured that forever meant forever. And it's kind of like all. You know, all means all. You know, it doesn't mean half, a portion thereof, or a little bit. It means the whole shoot and match. The whole ball of wax. All of it. Okay. So maybe it's just a matter of interpretation of a definition of a word, such as all or forever. To me, all or forever means forever, or it means all of it. Christians doesn't mean that. It means something else. It means half, two-thirds, three-fourths, 10%. It means for a while, you know, until a certain date, or until Jesus nailed it to the cross and took it out of the way. So, I don't believe that, and it leaves me out of the game. In Leviticus 23, verse 5, and then I just cited Exodus 12, 14, 12, 17, and 12, 24, tells you about Passover. Now, right after that comes the Days of Unleavened Bread, and we can read about that in Leviticus chapter 23. This goes pretty fast, because there's about five or six of them right here. The Days of Unleavened Bread, the Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, Sabbath Day, Pentecost, you know, these annual holy days. And we got these crazy holidays, feast days. All right. So if you flip over to Leviticus chapter 23, it has all of the Sabbath days in one chapter. All of the Sabbath days in one chapter. There's nothing in the Bible that I could find anywhere that would tell me that I should do Christmas, Easter, New Year's, Valentine's Day, Memorial Day, Mother's Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, or Workers' Communist Labor Day on the first Monday of September. Couldn't find them anywhere, and that includes Halloween. Couldn't find that one either. Now, those are the typical days that Christians, at least here in the United States of America, practice. I'm sure that you French Christians practice Bastille Day, and maybe in Canada you got a couple of three holidays in there. We got Martin Luther King Day in this country, and we got President Washington and President Lincoln's Day. And I mean, you know, we got a lot of holidays. And if you're a public employee, you get all those holidays off. Holiday. Holiday is a contraction of holy day. It's a counterfeit of these holy days. Did you know that? Holiday, holy day, you know, holiday, holy day. Well, God gave us these holy days. He said, these days are holy, and I want you to keep them and observe them. and there's seven of them. You got Passover, the days of unleavened bread, of which there's two annual holy days and the days of unleavened bread. Then there's Pentecost, Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles, which has two, the Feast of Tabernacles and the Last Great Day. Seven annual holy days. Passover's not a holy day, but Passover is the day you prepare the lamb, and then you eat it on the first day of unleavened bread. So in Leviticus 23, this chapter gives you these seven annual holy days, including the Sabbath day, which you read about in Leviticus 23, verse 3, and in Exodus 20, verse 8. Now, it's wild and it's crazy, and I know it's off the wall, it's right-wing, it's reactionary, and it's really dumb. But I'm not here trying to convince you that you should give up Christianity in favor of the insanity, in favor of the right-wing, reactionary, crazy religious ideologies of the Bible. I'm not suggesting that you should do that for a minute. The letter I received here from Eleanor was, well, why in the world do you say to people, or why do you claim that you're not a Christian when you read the Bible? And so what I'm telling you is, if you read Leviticus chapter 23, it's got these seven annual holy days in here. It's got Passover, Days of Unleavened Bread, Pentecost, Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles. I know they're all Jewish. I heard you the first time. I heard you. And anybody who would do such a thing would have to be a Jew. Well, I don't know, maybe God is a Jew, because he told us that we're to keep these annual holy days. Listen to some of these crazy words in here. I mean, this God is something else again. It says here, verse 1, it says, "And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, You speak unto the children of Israel, and you say to them, concerning the feasts of the Lord." No. You heard it right. It's the feasts of the Eternal, the feasts of the Lord, the feasts of God, the feasts of the God of Abraham. These are not the feasts of the Jews. Read it again, right here, chapter 1, if you got a Bible, whip it out. Leviticus, third book of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, whip over to chapter 23, got all the annual holy days in here. You're not going to find the 4th of July, Bastille Day, Christmas, Easter, and New Year's, but you're going to find the Passover, Days of Unleavened, of Unleavened Bread, and the Feast of Tabernacles, these crazy Jewish holidays. And listen to this. "And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, You speak unto the children of Israel, and you say to them, concerning the feasts of the Eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts." All right, so these feasts, God, whoever this God is, claims are his feasts. Then verse 3 says, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest. It's a holy convocation, and you shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Eternal in all of your dwellings. That's number one. When the seventh day of the week comes by, whichever that seventh day of the week is. Now, I guess the Muslims think it's on Friday, and the Seventh-day Adventists and Jews think it's on Saturday, and the Christians know that it's on Sunday. No doubt about it. And that's because all the Christians keep Sunday. Well, at least almost all of them do. There's a few renegades out there, the Seventh-day Adventists and Seventh-day Baptists and Jews and a few other right-wing crazies out there, but primarily, the Christians keep Sunday. I keep Saturday. I know I'm deceived. I'm a ding-a-ling, a right-wing reactionary. But remember, Eleanor, you asked me why it is that I said I wasn't a Christian. How in the world could I claim to be a Christian when I don't keep the Sabbath on Sunday? Furthermore, I don't work on the Sabbath. I don't work on Saturday. I mean, the world just stops around here. We don't cook. We don't light fires. I mean, it's kind of crazy. We just rest. We don't work at all. We don't mow the grass. You know, we don't trim the roses. We don't weed the garden. We don't work. Now, you know, anybody that does that has to be really weird. You got to be weird. So, I'm one of those weirdos. And I just wanted to let you know here that we practice the Days of Unleavened Bread, Pentecost, Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement. You can read all about that yourself. I'm not going to bore you to tears. Christians don't want to hear this. But it's the reason why I'm not one of the Christians. It's because up to number 11. Now remember, I don't eat swine's flesh, shellfish, take oaths, practice Christmas. I do practice the Passover, the Days of Unleavened Bread, Pentecost, Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, and the Sabbath day. That's 11 items right there in a row. 11 straight items that Christians do or don't do, that I do or don't do, in opposition to. I mean, if you put me on a scale of 1 to 10 for Roman Catholicism, I mean, I would flunk out. I mean, the Pope would kick me right out of catechism. In fact, that's what happened to me in the Lutheran Church. I was 11 years old. And they didn't do it, but they were almost ready to kick me out of Lutheran day school. I got to tell you how this comes down. You know, when you go to catechism, when you get to be about 11, 12 years old, you got to go to indoctrination. Now, they call it education, but it's really indoctrination. So you get all these kids, and you put them in a circle, and then you bring the preacher in. That's Mr. Kohler, and then he sits at Pastor Kohler. I'm sorry, Mr. Kohler. It's Pastor Kohler, and he sits there, and then he's talking to him. He doesn't read from the Bible, not in Lutheran. See, I don't know about the rest of you Christians, but not in Lutheran. We read out of Luther's Catechism. That's where you get all your religion comes out of, this blue book called Luther's Catechism, just a little thin book. Luther's Catechism. I was trained right out of Luther, so I know how that works. And the preacher would say, okay, now here's what we believe. And he'd say, no, here's what the Catholics believe. They're really down on Catholics. They'd say, well, the Catholics, they believe this, but here's what we believe. And then they'd cite Luther. See? And then they talk about the indulgences and about Luther nailing the 95 theses on the wall, you know, in the church door and so on, worms and all this. And then, now, do you understand that? And see, now there's about 10, 11 kids in this whole circle over here, and all the little kids are shaking their heads up and down. Try that. Just shake your head up and down. You got it. That's right. That's right. You got it. Except little Georgie Gordon. Now, little Georgie Gordon, He couldn't understand this very well, and so sometimes, not every time, sometimes I'd shake my head, oh yeah, I got it. Sometimes I'd shake my head horizontally. And that means no. So if you shake it vertically, that means yes. If you shake your head horizontally, that means no. And the preacher would look at me like, what is it about this that you don't understand? And then I'd raise a question, like Jeremiah chapter 10. And I'd say, well, what's this Christmas tree? Why are we doing this Christmas tree when the Bible says? And then the preacher would get embarrassed. And then he'd raise his voice at me and scold me because I was stupid. And I had this problem. Well, one day, the preacher came over to my house. And I was excluded from the kitchen. And the preacher was in the kitchen, but you know how little kids are. I went over to the door and I looked through the keyhole and I listened real intently at the door so I could listen to what the preacher was telling my mommy and daddy. And what the preacher was telling mommy and daddy was that little Georgie was mentally retarded. Yes, sir? Little Georgie was mentally retarded. So you're listening to a mental retard here on the radio, just in case you didn't know. You got that right straight from Pastor Kohler, who told my dad there's something decidedly wrong with little Georgie. When you got 11 kids in a class, and 10 of them are shaking their heads vertically, and little Georgie is shaking his head horizontally, it's either that his muscular coordination is screwed up, or little Georgie is mentally retardo. God, I felt bad. You know, when you're about, I don't know, 11, 12, 13 years old, and some guy comes over and tells mommy and daddy that you're a mental retard over here, something wrong with you, and you probably need psychiatric counseling or something like that, because you just don't fit in with Orwell's New World Order. You know, you're not fitting in well with 1984, and this is only 1950, or 51, or 52. Well, anyway, Pastor Kohler left, and so my daddy, he told me essentially what Pastor Kohler had said, and I didn't tell my daddy that I already knew because I'd been listening at the door. So I listened very intently, and my dad was pretty understanding, and he said, you know, son, the reason I'm sending you to this Lutheran school isn't because you're mentally retarded. It's because I want you to get a jump on these public school dimwits. And I know that they're going to teach you reading and writing and arithmetic more better than you're going to learn that reading, writing, and arithmetic over in the public school. I didn't send you there to get your religion, but you see, this religion is a part and parcel of these religious guys' educational curriculum, and you got to go through it. Now, look, sometimes you got to pretend. So next time, you know, when the preacher asks you this question, you just look at the kid next to you, and if he's shaking his head no, you shake your head no, and if he's shaking his head right and left, or up and down, you shake your head right and left and up and down, just like the kid next to you, and you'll get along real good, Georgie. And in Congress, we say, if you want to get along, you go along. You don't decide what's right and wrong, and you don't stake out a position and then stick with it. You need to flow like jello into the mold. And then when you harden up, then you'll know just exactly what jello in a mold looks like. And I've had that problem all my life, boys and girls. My head's been going in the wrong direction. Constantly. George Bush, you know, comes out and he tells me this and that, and I look at George Bush and I say, my God, does that guy really believe the lies that he's telling us? I listen to my senators and representatives in absolute horrid disbelief and say, my God, do those fools actually believe the lies that they're actually promulgating over the airwaves? I went to church one time, and I went to Sunday school twice, and went to church probably more than twice, but I remember this one time. I was at a Baptist church, and this preacher, he got up there and he preached this sermon. He got all through. He said, I've probably raised more questions than I've answered. Boy, you can say that again. Yeah, he raised more questions than he could answer. I figured right then, I said, I'm going to go back to Baptist church again. These guys, they ask a lot of questions, but don't know any answers. Hell, I went there to learn something. I didn't go there to listen to some guy ask a bunch of questions and say, I don't know the answers to these. I don't know what the solution to that is. I didn't need to go and spend my time listening to that. So we're up here to number 12, which is usury. I think I've got time to cover one more. Usury. Exodus 22, verse 25. And then Ezekiel 18, verses 5 through 14. Let's see if I can get over here to Ezekiel. Remember, that's right here in the middle of the Bible. It's a little bit to the right of Jeremiah. So, you got Jeremiah, and then you got Ezekiel, and go to Ezekiel chapter 18, and it talks about interest. Now, I'll bet you most of you people have a mortgage on your house, especially Christians. They have mortgages on their house, and they have credit cards, and they pay interest on their credit cards, and they probably bought a car, and they've got a car over here, and they're paying payments to GMAC. Well, that's called interest. Interest. And God tells you that this interest over here is against the law. In fact, it's a capital felony. Did you know that? The penalty for paying interest on a loan is death. Well, you could end up dead. D-E-D. Dead. I don't think that the average guy who signs up in church for the building fund, you know, the church goes to the bank and borrows money from the banker and pays interest on the loans to build the churches, and the people sign up and they pay the building fund with usury and interest, and it's a capital felony. Did you know that? We'll take it up right there next time. Number 12, 12 reasons. We got 37 reasons here why I'm not a Christian. Here's number 12, usury. I don't pay interest. I don't have a credit card. Shucks, I don't have any credit. All right, we're just about out of time, so I'm going to have to leave it right there. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. And the law school offers a free compact disc package, CD package. Just call direct 417-273-4967 to order yours. Remember, The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. I got to leave. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.